At Giant Eagle, you may have spotted the Stacker. With uncanny MyPerks ability, she stacks up the perks to choose either dollars off or up to 20% off her entire grocery bill. The Stacker, stacking up huge savings with MyPerks. Find your MyPerksonality and transform your shopping into free gas and groceries. Full details at GiantEagle.com/MyPerks. Perks cannot be earned or redeemed on select items. Restrictions apply.
Monday morning after the first Formula One race of the season, and after a long while, Kunal, it just feels like a great sense of peace and calm, because last night, what a box office of a race we got. There's this term in Hindi, it's called paisa vasool, and the notion roughly translates into you've got your money's worth. And yesterday at the Bahrain Grand Prix, goodness me, what a race it was. We probably got our money's worth in there. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Pits to Podium and Inside Line F1 podcast, Bahrain GP Debrief. My name is Soman Arora. Joining me is Kunal Shah, X-Force India Marketing Head, Formula One Consultant for VS Sport Network, among other things. And Kunal, very, very firstly, we didn't expect this, right? We didn't expect the race to be so good. And eventually, considering all the drama, all the hype, that Lewis Hamilton would go out there and win the race, as surprising as this may sound to say.
Hi, Somil. It's great to be doing this on a Monday morning. I think I'll actually have a different view. I sort of expected a blockbuster, you know. All the preseason narratives sort of came true this weekend, and that's not something that happens usually on the first opening race of the season in itself, right?
Exactly.
I knew that it would be a Hamilton versus Mercedes. Hamilton versus Verstappen.
That'll happen as well at the end of the season, mind you.
Yes, we had that in qualifying. We had that through the race. We sort of knew that Checo Perez might not necessarily be up there in qualifying, but he'll definitely be up there in the race. So, overall, just, I don't know where to start and where to stop, because like you said, an absolute blockbuster for Formula One. And I think the only thing that really concerns me is, instead of discussing the blockbuster, you know, we've spent, and when I say we, as in largely to everyone who makes content around Formula One in all forms of media, the sort of focus has shifted again to the FIA and their inconsistency in the whole track limits infringement case, which has been there, around for seasons. And it's just unfortunate, instead of focusing on, you know, the two different generations of drivers going head to head, we've shifted focus down to, hey, but are we being consistent in how we interpret the rules?
But that's an important point as well. That shall come later on. So to give you a bit of a gist of what to expect over the next 15 to 20 minutes, we shall be speaking about each team, what positives they can take back, and also for Formula One. And inevitably, we will speak about the elephant in the room. That is the track limits discussion. So Kunal, let's start up with the learnings for Formula One, the winnings for Formula One. And at last, it seems like, what, it's been 7-8 odd years since we've had a genuine, like a really genuine fight where you deep down feel that this one is going to go right to the end. We've got a competitor. We've got Red Bull Racing, who are actually here. And they seem like they could go to the very end. At least one of them so far, that is. That could change.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've seen 2019, 2020, you know, Hamilton only had, he was only challenged by Valtteri Bottas, you know, his teammate. And before that, we've had Sebastian Vettel and Ferrari sort of take the battle to the Mercedes guys. And, you know, deep down inside, you know, when Ferrari went up against Mercedes, they weren't as strong a challenger, in my view, okay? Because, you know, when they deliver a strong weekend, you'll still find that one area where Ferrari could have done better, you know? And when it comes to Red Bull Racing, they just seem evenly matched in most departments, probably a little better in the strategy department, if I may put it that way, you know? And again, this is my view. I'm sort of not backing it up with data because... It's just, you know, when it's a Verstappen versus a Mercedes, I feel it's two equal drivers in fairly equal machinery and fairly equal pit wall, you know, and when I say equal, of course, you average out the three and you'll realize that, you know, Mercedes is better at something and Red Bull is better at something else. And there's just this feeling of confidence that, you know, they won't bottle up in the battle. And I sort of got that feeling yesterday, and it feels really good if it's going to be like this for the next 22 races.
Exactly. It should be so much fun to watch. But what was incredible, Kunal? Now, the simple way to put it would be that I think yesterday was the first time in ages that we did not get bored of watching Lewis Hamilton win, because he had a fight. And man, this guy, you seem to put him in any sort of pressure scenario, he will bounce back. That's the one thing that we can all learn from Lewis Hamilton, right? And indeed, there is a discussion that's impending. We shall come to track limits later. Don't leave. But the amazing thing is that it maybe just isn't only the car. Hamilton, he's just superb, the kind of mental composure that he's got. And of course, he got passed by Verstappen off the track, that is. I know I'm building up to this too much, but he held his nerve. Even in the final three, four laps, he just could not get past Verstappen, that is, on Hamilton. Just held his nerve so well.
I'm glad that we actually have a Hamilton versus Verstappen, a Red Bull versus a Mercedes battle, Sommel, because, you know, again, it's one of those preseason narratives that has come true. Yeah. And coming to Hamilton and, you know, him winning the race, he literally dug deep into his experience of managing his tires and still leaving something for the battle with, you know, Max in the end. We saw him make a couple of rare mistakes under pressure, just showing just how much on the limit Max was pushing, you know, him to be as well. And, you know, I tweeted this out that, you know, races like these actually sort of flip the discussion, whether it's the car or the driver, especially when it comes to Lewis Hamilton's case, right? I think, and I know Lucien will pounce on me for saying this, right? But I think Lewis showed why he is a 7-times world champion yesterday. And, you know, you pointed out rightly, Sommel, that we weren't bored of a Lewis Hamilton win. All we want is somebody to put up a genuine fight up against him and then let the better driver win.
Exactly. And Sundaram has pointed out an excellent stat in our Pits to Podium stat review, link in the bio, that Hamilton won a curtain raiser race for the first time since 2015. And it just goes to show that it's been kind of absurd thing of sorts. Hamilton has not been able to capitalize early on, but people are buzzing, Kunal. People are saying that, hey, Hamilton's won a curtain raiser race for the first time since 2015. Maybe at last this could be the year that Verstappen wins, because all these years Hamilton didn't get the first win. And I know it doesn't make any sense. It's a bit of a hollow correlation, but we shall get to Max Verstappen as well, Kunal, because for Red Bull Racing, the real positive, track limits is impending, I know, but the real positive here, apart from that one, is that they genuinely are a well-rounded unit now. There just doesn't quite seem to be any flaw as such. Okay, Perez had a technical issue. That sort of stuff happens usually, but you have to focus on the core idea that Verstappen had a very good car. It was all backed up, and even with the minor niggles that he was facing with the engine, his pace was certainly right up there. I am just getting really good positive vibes out of this Red Bull team. It seems that this is a well-matched and well-balanced challenge towards the end of the season. It could be.
It could be so. I mean, it'll depend on a few points. You know, it'll depend on how soon they switch focus to 2022.
Which is it true. Will,
which they, it'll also depend on whether they literally, you know, go down the right development direction as well. We've seen that before, right? Teams are strong at the start of the season. They go down a road and they realize they don't end up being as quick towards the middle and the last parts of the season. And then, of course, we have the sliding scale aero regulations. So at least till the end of June, Red Bull will have more time to develop than Mercedes, right? But I think in the case of Red Bull, Sommel, this is the strongest start to a season that they've had. And it's very typical for, you know, fans who've been following Red Bull and Formula One for the last several seasons. They sort of start off a little slow. They build up and get stronger towards, you know, the end of the season, the second half of the season. But for them to have started this strong is a great sign if they still keep to their, you know, developmental pace, which is fantastic through the season, right? Yeah. And, you know, Verstappen didn't put a single foot wrong. You know, he seemed very calm. He seemed very composed. he didn't seem impatient. You know, he realizes that he realizes he is able to fight. And that is giving him the sort of, you know, calmness, the sense of calmness that he's probably been wanting all these seasons. He's, of course, wanted the car, you know, and that's what he's got. He's got the Honda power unit, which I think was phenomenal.
Yep.
And, you know, for him to pull out a pole position lap, which was almost 4/10 quicker than Lewis Hamilton, was another statement that he made, saying, if I have the machinery, I will take the fight to Lewis Hamilton.
Now, I'll be honest, right? In the last few months of Formula One, I got slightly discouraged just seeing Hamilton win all the time. It just kind of took away the charm for me. That qualifying session in Bahrain, Saturday evening, it got me back in. That was amazing stuff. Speaking of which, Honda and their power unit, 200th podium finish in F1 for Honda. And Sundaram has excellently pointed out that 26 of them came in 2019 alone. So from 2019 onwards, it's been a good resurgence for Honda that way. But now we shall come to it. Track limits, Kunal. Because a very, very eagle-eyed user, would be the right term to put it, has pointed out that Lewis Hamilton got a C4, that is, the corner after the back straight, the second straight in Bahrain, when you take the downhill descending right-hand turn. Hamilton went off there 26 times throughout the race, right? Hamilton got a black and white flag. He was told the track limits are becoming a bit of an issue. But apparently, race control said that they will not monitor C4 on normal laps if an advantage is not gained. Verstappen also made the move at that very corner, right? But in this case, he had one wheel off the curb, off the white line. So what's the whole discussion all about? People on Twitter are saying that Verstappen was, quote-unquote, robbed of a win. Was he really robbed of a win, though? Or is it just FIA being very, very strict in the sense that, okay, on a normal lap, you can do that, but when you're making an overtake, you can't do that. Does that make any sense of sorts?
It makes complete sense to me. I think the FIA did right on this count of, you know, going quickly onto the radio, telling Red Bull to let Lewis go by, because clearly, if you're going to go off the track to overtake someone, it's not legal, the overtaking move, and that's what happened with the Verstappen Hamilton battle. Yes, you know, Hamilton went over, as did several other drivers, but that was again another FIA directive, Somil, that,
exactly,
you know, we will not actively monitor track limits at the exit of turn four unless you gain, a lasting advantage, competitive advantage by leaving the track, right? But the in my mind, Somil, and, you know, we'll of course get answers in the next couple of days from the FIA, is I still remember the mid-race message exchanged between Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton, where Mercedes told Lewis, do not cross track limits at the exit of turn four. And Lewis was like, what? But I've been doing it all race. And then Mercedes said, yes, but the FIA are now getting too bumpy about that. So in all the post-race conferences, you know, Max and Lewis stuck to just one thing, that the FIA changed their mind mid-race, right? And that, to me, is the controversy. Listen, either you have track limits or you don't. But please don't change it through the middle of a race. Because then those who have sort of figured out how to get a lasting advantage and not get caught for it suddenly have to make amends. And those who sort of didn't make, you know, use of that infringement that you were allowing can't make use of it. And that's what actually happened, because, you know, Red Bull went onto the radio to tell Max that he could abuse those track limits through the race, only to then go back and tell him that, hey, now the FIA has sort of said no. So that, to me, is a controversy. Please don't change things mid-race.
Meditate, FIA, meditate. It really helps. It helps you keep your mind in a calm position, as we can all say on the Inside Line F1 podcast, with personal experience, that is. But amazing stuff to see, right? FIA just jiggling things around here and there, the inconsistencies. But I think they'll make up their mind eventually. They have to make up their mind. That's been the controversy. Not Verstappen going out, but the fact that they changed it mid-race. And you may be pointing out, dear listener or viewer, that it's just track limits, right? You can just drive inside, but it's become so habitual to them to try and take that sort of racing line that it becomes very, very hard to actually make that amends. Because, you know, racing drivers, right? You give them an inch, they'll take a mile. That's just the way they're programmed in life. But another incident that turned four, Kunal, that was very reflective, was what happened between one Daniel Ricciardo and Pierre Gasly. And I'll focus on Daniel Ricciardo and McLaren first, because they had a very good outing. A real positive for them was that Lando Norris got fourth and Ricciardo, if I'm not mistaken, was in P7. So what I can make up for them is just a good recovery. They've got the Mercedes engine in the car, no troubles. Straight away, they're putting good levels of performance.
I think, you know, the positive story for McLaren definitely was the fact that they were in the mix. And, they had a double points finish, which I think is phenomenal. You know, Ricciardo scoring, on his debut with McLaren. I also liked the opening lap skirmish between Norris and Ricciardo. And Norris actually edged ahead of Ricciardo. And I think that sort of set the tone of his race, where he's in his post-race media interviews for Via Sport. He actually said that I actually had a lonely race. And, you know, one of the reasons he had a lonely race is because he overtook Ricciardo and sort of pulled his own gap ahead. And Saumil, this reminds me of, you know, the series that we did. If F1 teams were stocks, would you buy, sell or hold? And I remember saying that, you know, for McLaren, they probably have edged a little ahead of the competitive midfield pack. And we actually got to see that. In Bahrain with Lando Norris's excellent P4 in the race.
Exactly. And Nithyan has pointed out an excellent point in a group chat that we have on WhatsApp. He just said that Otmar Szafnauer, team principal of Aston Martin, will be complaining to his wife about rake angles over dinner, because apparently they're really bugged about that. It's cost Aston Martin a fair bit of time. Representative, but we'll come to Aston Martin a bit later on. Next up, Kunal, good points for Ferrari, good points for AlphaTauri as well, because I have to make an amendment on what I said in the F1 Teams as Stocks podcast and video. I said AlphaTauri hold, now I say buy. It may not have been the best executed race, but man, there is a great degree of potential on that car. What are your positives for those two teams, Kunal?
You know, I think Ferrari, Charles Leclerc's P4, double points finish, largely an error-free race in, you know, on all counts for Ferrari, I would say. And they didn't seem as uncompetitive as they probably did last year. And, you know, through all the data that people have dug, Ferrari made the biggest leap between the last year's Bahrain Grand Prix and this year's Bahrain Grand Prix. So, all in all, pretty good for them, I would say. You know, and Charles's P4 in qualifying was just outstanding. For him to put his car up there on row to fight Bottas, take him on the opening lap, I think just great stuff. Hopefully they are able to sort of stick in this direction and develop their car further. And as for AlphaTauri, Yuki Tsunoda's, you know, points on debut, always very good. And I liked the humility with which Yuki addressed the media again, you know, in his post-race conference. And I could see this because of, you know, the Via Sport network. And he said, I need to improve just one thing that I can point out in my approach to the race weekend. And that's on the opening lap. I was too cautious and I lost several positions. But from here on, I've sort of learned what I need to do, and I will make an improvement in that regard, right? And just to sort of leave you with a thought, I am not sure where Pierre Gasly would have finished had he run the strong pace that he showed all through the weekend without losing his front wing with that skirmish with Daniel Ricciardo. I think Pierre Gasly would have probably finished ahead of Checo Perez.
I'm intrigued, right? I'm intrigued to see what happens with them. And Yuki Tsunoda, if you're listening, mate, don't ever change. We love you as you are. What a prodigy he is. And also for Ferrari, right? They had to make a leap. I heard prancing horses can jump very high and long. So maybe this was a start of that.
But before you go to the next team, I have to say this, right?
Yeah.
We were in the studio and I was listening into Yuki Tsunoda's interview, right? He came on to the podium where he sort of would speak. And then the first thing he did was he adjusts. He had to pull his mic down.
Oh, Yuki.
Yeah. Oh, and I think everyone had a smile on their face, you know, like, okay, yeah, we need to. Like, he literally had to pull and adjust it downwards, saying, okay, I needed to reach within my height.
Oh, man. Such a wonderful character, right? He makes you feel so warm, Yuki Tsunoda. I think we're going to start a Yuki Tsunoda fan club here on Pitch the Podium and the Inside Line F1 podcast. Sign in down below in the comments. Who knows where this will go? But let's move a bit lower down, Kunal. And we have to touch upon this very briefly because we have to discuss Mercedes' strategy as well. That was a very intriguing point before we go. But Aston Martin and Alpine, two top competitors in the 2020 Formula One season, as I mentioned, Otmar Szafnauer will not be impressed with the rake angles, but he also may not be impressed with what Sebastian Vettel did in his driving. Lance Stroll was still good. Stroll finished in P number 10. They could have expected more, but what kind of positive do you see for them and for Alpine, who just bad way to begin with the new name, I would say.
I think Stroll's P10 is definitely, as you know, something that the team has highlighted as a positive. Mm-hmm. And you know, personally, I would have thought that they would be far more competitive and be higher up the order and so on. But it's hard to look away from the embarrassment that you know, that has been with Sebastian Vettel all through the weekend. So you know, we know he had the least amount of miles in testing. He had the issue in qualifying where he was eliminated in Q1. Hmm. Worst was he got penalty points and a grid place drop for sort of, you know, ignoring the double yellow flags. Then comes the race. He had a great opening lap. He made six positions on the opening lap. But when it came to, you know, not making that one unforced error, which he's usually good at making, he failed. And I think the incident with Esteban Ocon, it was exactly what we don't like about mm-hmm. Sebastian Vettel. You know, great guy, humble, great ambassador for the sport, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, we were hoping that when he moves to Aston Martin, we will sort of see him, you know, find a way to get rid of these unforced errors. But they just sort of, you know, haven't left him yet. So that was a disappointment. And, you know, I'll speak about Alpine because to me, Fernando Alonso was phenomenal on the weekend. To see him pull that car into Q3 was just the best example of the Alonso magic that, you know, we've witnessed in Formula One, or we missed witnessing in the last 2 years. I think, you know, that was outstanding to go quicker than Ocon. Of course, Ocon also had, you know, a yellow flag issue and so on. But overall, just a shame that Fernando had to retire because of debris that sort of caused a rear, you know, rear brake issue. And then Ocon's race was compromised, you know, because of his qualifying. And then the punt with Sebastian Vettel.
That's the best way to put it, right? But we also got to see Vettel versus Alonso midway through. Good memories of 2014, if you all remember, and 2011, 2012, all those years. Heartwarming, but not the best conclusion to that. Let's see what these world champions could do. Another world champion that we should very briefly touch upon. Kimi Raikkonen did a very good job with Alfa Romeo. And yes, they did not score points. I think it is Alfa Romeo, Williams, Haas, and
Alpine,
who did not score points, that is. But still, a good weekend, I would say, for Alfa Romeo. There was a strong sense of solidity around their team. That was nice to see. Well, what would you say about them and the remainder of the teams that we have here? Then we move on to Mazepin, of course.
I think Kimi was typically Kimi, you know. He had some fantastic radio moments. So that's always a positive. You know, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Fantastic radio. Just the opening radio message we'd love
from. We still don't know if he could actually hear him or not.
You know, I expect this to be one of the questions in his media sessions in Imola, right? And then I think Alfa Romeo also did great with the Kimi meme that they sort of got, you know, with him holding the board and people using and misusing that board. So all in all, you know, great fun off track, I would say. On track, the team had to use a bit of team orders because there was complaining saying, hey, I'm quicker than him. Can you ask him to go quicker? And, you know, in the end, they missed out on scoring points by just 2 seconds. That was the gap to, you know, Lance Stroll that he had. But overall, a solid recovery, I would say, because last year they probably wouldn't have seemed as quick. And I think it's a lot to do with the improved power unit that, you know, Ferrari have brought to themselves and their customers this season.
Yeah, exactly. Good performance by Alfa Romeo. Now, one of the other Ferrari customer teams had a bit of a dismal weekend. It seems like a bad way to have your first rodeo for your two rookies, but the Haas feels like just that. It feels like a rodeo, Kunal. It's so hard to contain. And yes, Mazepin has made mistakes, right? Let's judge him
Five
as
spins.
five spins, massive spins, that is. But of course, we are getting down a bit too hard on him considering what he's done. But let's leave that aside. Let's focus on the driving itself. Not very good. But we also saw Mick Schumacher spinning out. So perhaps it's not just him, but it's also the car that's very, very hard to drive. And that's hardly a way to get in, right? It's like you've been chucked onto the raging bull of sorts, and you have no experience. I mean, they do have experience, but nothing, not of a bull of this sort. It's just a wild beast, this Haas, but not in a good way.
Well, you know, the only positive for Haas from this weekend was that Mick Schumacher finished his race. And I think that would have been their target for the first race, mind you, because, you know, it's not something that Mazepin could do. He couldn't even finish 5 laps of the race, I
Jack
would say.
Aitken, I'm sorry, but Jack Aitken put out a tweet saying, "I felt very proud of doing 60 laps in Sakhir before spinning out." Salute. Yeah, ace. That's how you use Twitter.
But you know, I think in the next few days we will sort of hear more about what actually happened with the Haas drivers, because their spins seemed very very similar to each other. You know, could be down to, you know, colder tires, although that seems a little unlikely in the case of Mazepin spin, I would say. But it could also be, you know, full fuel loads and them not being used to driving, you know, such a heavy Formula One car, and you know, so on. So but like you know, like they pointed out on the commentary, you know, by now you'd probably know what it would be like in your first Formula One race and not sort of bin it the way you did Mazepin, right? But you know, since we are talking of Twitter, I read another tweet that you may not like Mazepin as a human, but at least the opening round in Bahrain showed that he's a terrible Formula One driver. Sorry.
Oh man,
We're
that.
not in the business of pulling down drivers and talent, but
No.
you know, it's just Maz's spin, I guess.
I hope he grows as a driver, that is, and as a person as well, right? You just want people to grow and accelerate. Let's hope he has the best of luck with that. But a lighter note, Kunal. Okay, for all the Sebastian Vettel fans, don't. I'm just kidding. I'm a fan as well. I love Sebastian Vettel just for the fun of it, right? Maybe Sebastian Vettel came down and gave them tutorials of sorts how to do a bit of a spinneroo like there. Nah, just kidding. Just a hard car to drive that house. But finally, Kunal, some big topics, right? The big chunk of things that we have come up to before we close up. Mercedes and their strategy, because that was a real talking point. Now, it may not be something that may shine very brightly. It's something that you have to just have a look at more in a more detailed format, then you try and pick it out. But Mercedes went on the hard tires for 9 laps midway through the stint, and they went back on another set of hards that went on towards the very end. Now, that didn't seem according to plan, mind you, because I mean, if they only had to do 9 laps, they would have put on a set of softs or mediums, right? That would have given them more pace. What in the world happened there?
I think, Samuel, what's
With
probably
Hamilton, that is,
happened.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I'll take a step back, and you know, something Max Verstappen pointed out, that this is the first race of the season when there's a standard tire allocation. So each driver gets 13 sets of tires, and you know, each one of them gets three mediums, two hards, and the rest of them are all soft tires and the likes, right? And I know you asked me about Hamilton's strategy, but
Yeah.
I'll sort of explain the answer with Max's strategy, right?
Okay.
So for Max Verstappen's second stop, he had no mediums that he could have selected because they had used up all the mediums in
That's right.
practice and in the opening two stints, right? And as a result of that, he only had the hard and the soft to go with. And one of the things Max said as a learning for the team is maybe they use their tire allocation differently through the practice sessions, right? So maybe a similar thing with the Mercedes drivers as well, right? That they sort of knew what compounds would work better for them and hence just stuck to that. And as a result of which, we sort of saw what they did. They also had the long pit stop with Valtteri Bottas. And I think Mercedes also were keeping in mind that they wanted to rule out more strategic options for Max Verstappen. And that's what they typically ended up doing, right? Because you know, when they pitted Hamilton the first time, they literally made it very difficult for Max to sort of pit the next lap and still try and regain the lead. So, full marks to Mercedes for playing around with Max's strategy one more time, Samuel.
Exactly. That was one good thing that they did. It seemed bizarre on first impression, but it worked out eventually. The undercut is what they played out very end. But lastly, Kunal, Bottas. Now, before people rule him out and say, oh, wingman, he's not good enough, he's bad, he's X, he's Y, we've seen, okay, he may not be at the same level of Lewis Hamilton, I'm sorry. But yesterday, I don't think he was too bad, right? I mean, if you kind of take away the extra 8 seconds he spent in the pit stop, and then the strategy that he was hampered with and everything, eventually he just came up to around 3.5 seconds close to Max by the end of the race, which is no mean feat, but that's not too bad, right? And that's with the extra pit stop for taking fastest lap as well, if you cut that out too. I don't think we should pounce upon him too bad. He was decent, not anything extraordinary, but not the way people have kind of reacted in some spaces.
Well, it all depends what one was expecting from Valtteri Bottas. And, I was expecting him to be a title contender in 2021, purely because it's, in all probability, his last season with Mercedes. He's been trying all these years. He's sort of still yet to beat Lewis. And now, instead of beating just Lewis, he's probably realized that he's got to beat Lewis and Max Verstappen, right? So he needs to be Valtteri 10.0 if it takes 5.0 to get to Lewis, because I think Valtteri is soon going to fade away in the headlines for the Drivers' Championship title in 2021. I hope to be proven wrong. I have lots of Finnish friends who absolutely love Valtteri, and Mika Häkkinen still believes that Valtteri is world champion material. So I'm not taking anything away from his talent, but just saying that, when you see what Max and Lewis could pull off yesterday, and also in qualifying and the likes, it just shows that when it comes to taking that extra couple of tenths, they are able to do that. And personally, I'd love to see a three-way battle for the Drivers' Championship, Samuel. That would be outstanding.
The more the merrier. Let's see if that is actually going to be the case at Imola. We're going to have our pre-race preview right here on Pitch the Podium and the Inside Line F1 podcast. So don't forget to join in. And I have said this only once today. As always, if you feel like you've enjoyed this podcast or this video, leave us a like, drop us a very constructive comment, and don't forget to share this video with your fellow Formula One enthusiasts. We want to make a better community here. We want to make it a bigger sort of environment where we have more fans coming in, interacting. Let's make this a fun place, right? Give it a share, give it a like, give it a comment if you liked it. And thank you so much for being a part of this, Kunal. We folks shall see you. Man, that sucks. We shall see you for the next race at the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix 3 weeks later. But I think we'll have more content midway through, won't we?
We will, but Samuel, I will not let you go. And sorry for doing this to you publicly, but you have to say the whole name one more time. And it's changed for 21. It's changed for 21.
Now I see what you're talking about. So this is going to be the name for the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, right? And I'll quickly Google it up right
There you
here.
go. I thought you would have memorized it by now,
No,
Samuel.
no. It's Formula One Emirates Gran Premio dell'Emilia Romagna 2021. It's not too bad. It's all right. It's not too complicated for this year. But the real kicker was the Mugello Grand Prix last year. Oh my goodness me. That was Formula One Gran Premio Ferrari 1000 della Toscana, something. It was really
You actually missed one word in this in the name, and I googled it as well. It's Formula One Pirelli Gran Premio
Pirelli.
del made in Italy dell'Emilia Romagna 2021. Sorry for that, guys, but just Samuel and I have been cracking this joke for several weeks now.
It truly is made in Italy. Say what you want, but man, what a name that is. And I'm going to do a Jeremy Clarkson here on that bombshell. We shall see you next time out. It's time to go, folks. Thank you so much for watching and listening. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye-bye.